This is an iHeart podcast.
So before we get into our medical institutions specifically, I just wanted to talk to you again about institutional trust, institutions, nations, how nations remain, because I see something happening globally right now in many, many, many places. Honestly, many places considered to be Western civilization, I see this happening. It's happening here in the United States of America, Canada, UK, of course, France, Germany. I see this happening. A very, very common thing throughout history is happening, and this is how it oftentimes goes. A country will be established somehow, some way, and then the country will begin to flourish and grow. People will be happy, prosperous. And over time, the institutions on which a nation is built, remember, nations are built on their institutions. They are the pillars that hold your nation up. Your government, your education, your religion, your entertainment, your various things. Those are institutional things that create a country. Over time, the institutions will become corrupted. As the people check out, get too comfortable, lazy, whatever word you want to put on it, the institutions will be infiltrated and conquered by evil, corrupt people. And once the institutions become corrupted by evil people, the institutions will begin to serve themselves instead of the nation. You know, that the education institution of a country, it actually should never be to serve the education. It should be to serve the country. That should be the ultimate goal. The government, people inside the government shouldn't exist to serve the government, to better the government, enrich the government, expand the government. The government should exist to, well, help the country, serve the country. But once it's conquered by evil, selfish people, that changes. The institution focuses inward, focuses on itself. And after that corruption happens, the institution will do terrible things. It will lie. Evil act after evil act will happen. And the people themselves will know it. No matter what. No matter what age you're in. Today, we all have cell phones, right? You can read about it. But no matter what age you're in, the people will begin to pick up on the fact that this institution is turning evil, selfish. And then something disastrous happens. The people will begin to separate from the institution. They will begin to view the institution as the enemy instead of a necessary pillar holding up society. And once you get to that point, the end of that country is in sight. I'm not saying it's happening tomorrow, but you have to have trust between the people and their institutions or the country will end. You cannot have this separation and continue to exist as a country. It doesn't work. And I see it happening globally right now. I know you see it too. Institutions have already broken the trust. Time after time, issue after issue, they've broken the trust. And they're all, virtually all of them, except for here in America, which we'll get to in a moment, but virtually all institutions now are doing what they always do. And it blows me away because the lesson of history is quite clear. The institutions, instead of trying to earn back the trust of the people, open up the books, hold people accountable, instead they double down, triple down on all the evil, selfish things, thus bringing about the end of the country much faster than it would have happened otherwise. Here in the United States of America, our institutions are evil and corrupt as well. Evil, corrupt, dishonest. We don't have to look very far back in history to see an example of just how evil, corrupt, and dishonest our institutions are. Remember COVID?
You really should, in an indoor setting, a congregate setting, be wearing masks. It's just the appropriate thing to do to defend, to protect yourself and your family.
Our data from the CDC
today suggest, that vaccinated people do not carry the virus, don't get sick.
Ivermectin is something more often used to deworm horses.
If we really do our part, stay at home, social distance, then we can flatten our curve even below those projections. But it really depends on all of us.
I'm making the personal sacrifices not to infect my parents and my pregnant daughter. I worry about that because then it gives people the option to say, well, if bars and restaurants are open, then I can have 20 people over for Thanksgiving. And so I don't like it to be any number. I like it to be keep it to your immediate household.
Obviously, we could just play a montage that lasted the whole show. Those were all lies. Every one of those people was lying, and they knew they were lying. Every one of them. Lying. Evil. And as they told lie after lie after lie while your life was being destroyed, while you had to say goodbye to your dying mother on Zoom, you couldn't have a funeral, while your child lost their ability to read, that trust began to shatter between our medical institution and this country. And then, of course, the vaccine, which of course is not a vaccine at all, it's a therapeutic of some kind, created by and through Operation Warp Speed. Operation Warp Speed was terrible, one of the most evil things this country has ever done. That poisonous shot harmed numerous people who are still out there searching for justice. Maybe that's you watching right now. And up until recently, even Trump was still touting it.
Despite COVID, which was a very unfortunate situation for the whole world. We did a great job with it. Never got the credit for the job we did. Operation Warp Speed, people say, is one of the greatest achievements ever in politics or in the military, because it was almost a military procedure. But everybody, including Putin, said that Operation Warp Speed, what you did with that, nobody can believe it. And we did a great job.
It wasn't great. It was horrible. It was evil. It was wrong. Now, Donald Trump has to own that. Has not really ever done so up until recently. So what happened with Trump and Warp Speed? And I'm not excusing him, so don't think that I am. What happened, though? Donald Trump was lied to by all the people around him. Everyone's going to die. You're going to have 50 million people dead. Everyone's going to die. Do you want to be the president when 50 million people die? They're all going to die. A lot of death, mass death. Mr. President, we need a vaccine now. We could get one ready to go. We need this done now. Fast track this thing. Gigantic fat handout to pharmaceutical companies who didn't have to jump through any more hoops to make sure it was safe. And out it goes. And now we have pregnancies being terminated by the million. We won't even go into that little number. Donald Trump was lied to, bought into the lies, pushed it, and people died. But Donald Trump has really, really solid people around him now that, to his credit, he has brought into the administration. Dr. J, Marty McCary, several others, smart people who know the truth about this stuff. And Donald Trump is now hearing the truth, and he put out this statement, quote, "It is very important that the drug companies justify the success of their various COVID drugs. Many people think they are a miracle that saved millions of lives. Others disagree. With the CDC being ripped apart over this question, I want the answer, and I want it now. They show me great numbers and results, but don't seem to be showing them to many others. I want them to show them now to the CDC and the public and clear up this mess one way or the other. I hope Operation Warp Speed was as brilliant as many say it was. If not, we all want to know about it and why." Now, I know if you are somebody still angry about all that, that that seems like a small thing, and it is, but it's also not. That is a huge first step, and I will say this, that's more than is happening in any other Western country to earn back the trust of the people in their institutions. You can say it's small. Okay, it's small. No one's doing that in Canada. They're all doubling down, tripling down. No one's doing that in Germany, in France, in the UK. It's not happening anywhere else in the Western world. It is slowly happening here. Bad people are being removed from the government. The Trump administration acknowledging when mistakes are made and fixing those mistakes. Like this Susan Monterez, Trump had someone else in mind to head up the CDC. Of course, Big Pharma didn't like him because they're a bunch of evil, poisonous scumbags. So they own a bunch of United States senators, including Republicans like Bill Cassidy of Louisiana. They torpedoed his nomination. Trump went with this Susan Monterez girl for some reason, because there were red flags all over the place.
What can we do to ensure that at steady state, not just in response to a pandemic, but at steady state, that we have an open and inclusive and a fully benefiting clinical trial network, so that we can ensure that it's equitable, that it's accessible, that it isn't just skewed towards a demographic or a geographic or a patient population, but we actually have an inclusive clinical trial network.
You heard all the buzzwords. She's a dirty communist who never should have been there. Well, now she's gone, and that's a good thing. Keep in mind where we were. I just mentioned we have Dr. J and others involved now with the national health institutions of this country. Keep in mind where we were. Remember when they tried to create a new pandemic scare out of this monkeypox thing, and they brought in this muddy buddy on TV to tell you about it?
Sure.
The confusion that exists, the misperceptions.
Yeah, so I think, you know, this virus transmits through very close skin-to-skin physical contact, often in the setting of sexual exposure. But there are other mechanisms for its transmission, including if you touch objects that individuals who've had monkeypox touch, or if you have prolonged exposure to respiratory droplets. With that said, signaling to people who are in the gay, bisexual, other men who have sex with men communities, and also transgender people who have sex with men, that it's really important to have awareness that it's circulating in the community is really a critical part of the messaging, while not generating inordinate concern and really focusing on the infection as linked to an identity. So it's just an infection, it's not linked to an identity. It just happens to be in the social network.
No, it's linked to an identity. It's a gay disease that only affects people who engage in gay activity or the dogs they couple with. Yeah, you forgot about that story, right? Those were the people who were in charge of America's health institutions. Of course, that dude resigned because we're getting rid of a lot of the bad people in the CDC. Now, he's the shining star on all the morning shows trashing the Trump administration.
We're seeing the tip of the iceberg. So right now, I think probably the most prominent demonstration of that is what Secretary Kennedy did with changing the childhood schedule for COVID-19. In that, we were directed that only children with underlying conditions would be the ones that should qualify for vaccination. That's not what the data shows. I mean, from my vantage point as a doctor who's taken the Hippocratic Oath, I only see harm coming. I may be wrong, but based on what I'm seeing, based on what I've heard with the new members of the Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices, or ACIP, they're really moving in an ideologic direction where they want to see the undoing of vaccination. They do want to see the undoing of mRNA vaccination. They have a very specific target on COVID, but I do fear that they have other things that they are going to be working on. Hepatitis B vaccine is on the agenda for the meeting in September. I predict that what they're going to do is try to change the birth dose of hepatitis B vaccine so that kids don't get it when they're born.
Yeah, kids shouldn't be getting that when they're born. These were the people who were in charge of the institutions. They're being removed now. Be grateful that at least some of our institutions are attempting to bring that trust back, to create that bond again. Is it enough? No, it's not enough yet. It's more than we've had. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. What does it mean to feel good? I feel good. Do you feel good? I don't feel good. Well, the truth is that we don't feel good. In fact, we feel bad way too often because our levels are off. Our energy. We shouldn't need a cup of coffee at 3 p.m. Now, don't get me wrong, I love my afternoon coffee. It shouldn't be I need this because I'm dragging. When you get home from work, are you still full of pep, ready to go? Make dinner, go for a walk, play with the kids, or are you out of gas? Try some chalk. It's about to change your life and make your life better. Try some natural herbal supplements, some chalk, and you're gonna find out what it means to feel good. a better mood, better energy, your mind works better. You'll be better at home, you'll be better at work. Your entire life gets better when you allow Chalk into it. Go to chalk.com/JesseTV. Your life's about to improve. Well, I do have some bad news. Well, good news and bad news. The good news is Senator Ron Johnson is here, but the bad news is Congress is back in session, so I'm sure we're about to get screwed in one way or another. So joining me now, Senator Ron Johnson from the great state of Wisconsin. Okay, Senator, before we get into the spending, which I have no doubt is coming, and we'll be told that we have to pass it or the world will come to an end, what's happening at the CDC? Because it looks like good things from my perspective.
Well, Jesse, I would tend to agree with you. I don't have knowledge of all the inner workings, but from my standpoint, I think federal health agencies were corrupted. I think it's been obvious, certainly since COVID, that the federal health agencies were captured by big pharma, other interests. They weren't serving the interests of the American public. They were lying to us. I mean, there's a long list of lies told during COVID. The injection was going to stay in our arm. Again, things we weren't told about the biodistribution of the injection. It's an injection. The covering up of the myocarditis signal that we know now. We have documents of that. There's going to be more information coming out of other signals that they also hid. These agencies have lost the trust in the American public because they haven't been trustworthy. And these are the individuals that push the mandates. They're the people that covered things up, lied to the American public. And from my standpoint, I'm happy to see them go.
Senator, it's kind of a general question, but I think the trust between people and their institutions is just everything for a country, and that a country will end if that trust is broken. Do the people who run these institutions, all of them, health, I mean, FBI, media, whatever, do they realize that? Does that go into any of their heads as they tell lie after lie and then cover up the lie that they just told and then cover up for the cover up? Do any of these people care that that trust is necessary or the country will end?
You know, what I found, again, I'm not of this world. I'm an accountant from Oshkosh, Wisconsin, came here, never ran for office. All of a sudden here in Washington, D.C., and this is a bubble. It's a very thick, well-insulated bubble. And I think that's part of the problem is you have all this government concentrated right here in this alternate universe. A better idea would literally be to send out these agencies into different states so that the people that, serve those agencies come from different places, not just within the Beltway here. But I think that's a big problem. I've often said that we just don't have enough people in Washington, D.C., not in the administration, not in Congress, not in congressional staff, that have any experience in, which means very little knowledge of, and maybe worse, sympathy for the private sector. They don't have a clue how hard it is to run a business and how all the rules, regulations, the taxes that they impose on businesses just make it that much more difficult. So it's just a matter of simply, again, no experience in, very little knowledge of, and maybe worse, no sympathy for. And then throw on top of that, and we'll talk about this with spending, they've never even been part of a functioning organization where you have a mission statement, where you have a vision statement, where you set annual goals, where the people that are part of the organization understand their role they play to accomplish those goals. And again, here we are. We don't appropriate these accounts, not in any kind of rational way. It's these 2,000 plus page omnibus spending bills that nobody has a chance to read. Somebody writes them somewhere. They slip all kinds of crap in there, and that's been accepted here. Like that's how the government operates. It's a $7 trillion a year entity. $7 trillion, $7,000 billion. And we don't have our act together where we actually appropriate. And again, all we're trying to appropriate is about a quarter of it. 75% of it is on automatic pilot. And they set it up that way so they don't have to appropriate it. So the government just continues to grow. And as government grows, our freedoms recede. So no, I'm not a fan of this place at all.
Senator, okay, I mean, you brought it up. We might as well get into this horrible subject. A spending bill is coming of some kind. What is coming? Is it multiple bills? Is it an omnibus bill? What is coming and how bad is it going to be?
probably the best case scenario would just be a continuing resolution. Again, it's an awful way to run government, but if you have to do a deal with Democrats, they're going to demand more spending, and we can't afford it. Jesse, I know you know that since January 1st this year, I've been arguing that we must return to a pre-pandemic level of spending. We're not even close. You know, I laid out options somewhere between $5.5 and $6.5 trillion. We're still spending well over $7 trillion. You know, the one big beautiful bill knocked that down a little bit, but not by much, not anywhere near enough. And so probably the best situation is just continued spending at this year's level. Don't increase it. Do that for year after year after year. It's probably the best case scenario until literally we have the public demanding fiscal conservatism. Now President Trump, remember in his address to Congress, said he wanted to do something in the near term that hasn't been done in 24 years, balance the federal budget. Well, listen, no president in my lifetime has honored his promises more than President Trump has. I want to hold him to his word, and I'll do everything I can to help him with that. Line by line review, program by program review of the federal budget, nothing should be off the table. But that's what it's going to take. It's going to take like forensic accounting and analysis and information, and the public has to be behind us, because that's a big problem, Jesse. Is when you don't have the public demanding it, what the public wants is they want their benefits, right? They want their benefits. You can cut somebody else's benefit, but don't cut my benefit. And by the way, tax somebody else for my benefit as well. So that's the game the American public is basically playing. Tax somebody else to provide me my benefit. And, oh, by the way, increase my benefit. That's the state of play in America today. You know, driving to the airport today, I was listening to Wisconsin Talk Radio. 3.5 million riders of the Milwaukee transit system don't pay the bus fare. That's like 8 million bus fares going unpaid annually. That is the level of lack of respect for law, the lawlessness that we're living in today here in America. It's not a pretty sight.
Speaking of lawlessness, look, I honestly don't want to single her out, even though I can't stand her. Ilhan Omar, there's a big story out there today that she makes $174,000 a year. Her net worth is $30 million. We hear about the stock trading all the time, where members of Congress somehow beat Warren Buffett every single year in the stock market. It's such naked corruption that seems like it should be such an easy thing to solve. What is happening back there?
Well, again, I don't know the specifics of her situation, but it sounds like she was funneling campaign contributions to her now husband when he was not her husband, and they built up a little nest egg there. And again, I don't know how else they built their wealth, but yeah, I mean, somebody like her goes from nothing to $6 to $30 million in wealth. Again, it's a weird account. It's a weird financial disclosure. They have these ranges from 1 to 5 million, 5 to 25 million. So you can really over-exaggerate what a member of Congress is worth. But apparently her minimum is $6 million. And I think that ought to be investigated. Remember when this came before Homeland Security, we had an amendment. Rick Scott had a great amendment. Well, why don't we investigate how Nancy Pelosi got all her wealth? We've got to do the same thing with Ilhan Omar, anybody else who just has this outsized wealth that they didn't come into Congress with, but all of a sudden, after serving a few years, all of a sudden they're worth millions. That ought to be investigated and, if necessary, prosecuted. We have laws on the books to prevent this kind of fraud.
Senator, back to what we were talking about before. You mentioned 3/4 of the spending is automatic. Is there any way to undo that, or is all of it these third rail of politics stuff where the second you bring it up, someone's going to say you're trying to take away grandma's Social Security and you lose your next election? Can we do anything about this spending?
Yes. The thing I continue to point out is if you leave Social Security and Medicare off the table, even Medicaid, we've got $1 trillion of other mandatory spending. It should be discretionary spending. But again, what Congress has done, because they want to keep spending more money, is they just deviously transfer what should be discretionary spending appropriated to other mandatory. And so it just becomes mandatory. And again, it's out of sight, out of control. So that's the game they've been playing. But you know, that's why I keep pointing out there's close to $400 billion that we're spending this year, that if you take 2019 expenditures plus them up by inflation and population, we're spending $400 billion more than that inflated figure from 2019. That excludes Social Security and Medicare.
Good God. Senator, thank you so much. I appreciate you. You know what my cell phone company does when they give back? Because you already know what Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile, you know what they give back to. Whatever the newest commie cause du jour is out there, Pure Talk gives back to veterans. It's always about the veterans. The CEO of Pure Talk did two tours in Vietnam, and now he runs this wonderful company that'll charge you less for your cell service. It's on the same towers, and when Pure Talk gives back, it's all about the vets. When it's Independence Day, they were giving out American flags to veterans. Veterans you nominated, here, have an American flag. They're getting veterans back on their feet. Medical care, debt, getting veterans the help they need and the help they deserve. That's what my cell phone company does while charging me half of what I was paying at T-Mobile. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV and make the switch today. It's time. Switch to Pure Talk. Let's talk about Democrat violence as more rhetoric continues to increase from their side. First of all, understand that you don't commit acts of violence all the time, and you don't wish violence on other people all the time only because you have something morally against it. Me too. It's not that I'm a completely nonviolent person, I admit that, but even our political opponents. You know, if we woke up tomorrow and saw that Joe Biden died, I wouldn't cheer, wouldn't be happy. I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to sob. I don't care for him, but that wouldn't make me happy. I wouldn't go online and say, woo, he's dead, yes. Just wouldn't occur to me. But that is because we have a different value system than communists do. And the enemies of communists throughout history, this is not unique to America, have always struggled to fully understand that. To a communist, violence is a necessary part of the revolution. It is a necessary part of the revolution. It is so necessary, he will encourage it. Sometimes, really, really subtly encourage it. Sometimes he'll flat out tell people, go commit acts of violence. But to him, because he has nothing morally against it, violence is just second nature. And don't think for a moment I'm only talking about Democrat politicians, you know, elite communists, or I'm only talking about Antifa or BLM, you know, street communist types. This goes for, well, according to polling, the majority of Democrat voters in this country are comfortable with violence. Do I need to remind you of the poll during COVID that showed the percentage of Democrats that believe that you should be arrested and thrown into a camp if you didn't mask up, didn't take the vaccine? The percentage of Democrats that thought your children should be taken away from you? It wasn't 10%. These are normal people. Those are acts of violence. To them, force, violence, it's what you do. You get power, you get the ability to use violence, and you use it. Maybe the violence comes in the form of a deranged street animal. Maybe you've taken control of some government agency, local police force, national police force, whatever it is. When you have the power to physically hurt people in some way, the communist uses that power. Always has, always will. And this is what I continue warning us about on the right. They believe now, because they don't control the government right now, because the Trump administration is making some really solid steps, they believe violence is more necessary now than it has been before. And they are spreading that around, and we're seeing more violence now. Remember James Comey, former head of the FBI? 8647, what essentially amounts to a subtle death threat, a subtle encouragement for somebody to harm Donald Trump. He knew exactly what it meant. This is not some street animal, some drugged out loser on TikTok. You know, Donald Trump, That's the former head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Now let's talk about what happened over Labor Day weekend. Trump disappeared for a couple days. I don't know what he was doing. Didn't matter. But online, on the internet, some weird rumor started that he was dead. Very bizarre, that he was dead. It actually led to a pretty funny exchange between Trump and Peter Ducey. Here it was.
Something completely different, but about a big viral social media trend over the weekend. How did you find out over the weekend that you were dead? You see that?
No.
People didn't see you for a couple days. 1.3 million user engagements as of Saturday morning about your demise.
Really? I didn't see that. You know, I have heard, it's sort of crazy, but last week I did numerous news conferences, all successful. They went very well, like this is going very well. And then I didn't do any for 2 days, and they said, there must be something wrong with him. Biden wouldn't do him for months. You wouldn't see him. And nobody ever said there was ever anything wrong with him, and we know he wasn't in the greatest of shape.
Pretty funny. But let's talk about Tim Walz. Hey, look, we could go a lot of different places with this, but let's talk about what Tim Walz said. Tim Walz is the governor of Minnesota. We have 50 states. He's the governor of one of them. Stood up in front of a bunch of Democrats as that Trump's dead rumor was flying. Here's what he said.
You get up in the morning and you doom scroll through things, and although I will say this, the last few days you woke up thinking there might be news. Just saying. There will be news sometime, just so you know. There will be news.
We know what he's saying there. You woke up hoping that Donald Trump was dead. And hey, he is going to die at some point in time. The governor of Minnesota. It's so open now with Democrat voters, street communists, elite communists. And in fact, Mr. Producer, I want you to play that video one more time for me. And this time, instead of listening to Tim Walz, because Tim Walz is a quack, I got that, I want you to listen as the governor of Minnesota wishes death on the president of the United States openly behind a microphone. I want you to listen to how the crowd responds when he does it. Go ahead.
You get up in the morning and you doom scroll through things, and although I will say this, the last few days you woke up thinking there might be news. Just saying. There will be news sometime, just so you know. There will be news.
Oh, gosh. That's so funny. Let's hope, huh? Violent people. You have to remember you're dealing with people who view violence differently than you view violence. Remember Ryan Ralph, the guy who was waiting to shoot Donald Trump on the golf course? Ryan Ralph, crazies like that, they hear that kind of rhetoric and they act on it. Remember the guy who flew from California to murder Brett Kavanaugh? He heard people like Chuck Schumer threatening the justices with reaping the whirlwind, and you just ignore that as a standard Democrat speech, but the street animals who are okay with political violence don't view it that way. They view it as marching orders. Senator Marsha Blackburn, Tennessee, just had a 22-year-old woman charged with threatening to kill her. They believe, even the average ones, they believe violence is a necessary means to an end. They have been so deluded, so poisoned, their minds so poisoned to believe that the world is coming to an end. If Donald Trump remains in power, if Republicans get power, this is the end of all humanity. These are Nazis. These are this. All this apocalyptic language, time after time after time after time, has convinced the average Democrat that now, well, I have no choice but to commit acts of violence. And when their little street animals, when their little pets commit acts of violence, the elite communists then run to cover for them as best they can. That tranny shooter we just had in Minneapolis, that horrible freaking shooting, little Catholic kids, NBC issued a public apology for misgendering the tranny. A public apology. And do keep in mind, speaking of that, What have we talked about? Why do Democrats want your guns? Are they naive? You know, because whenever they bring up gun confiscation, we will, because we don't understand what we're dealing with, we'll hold up some facts and we'll say, well, actually, if you look at the highest gun law states, they're the most violent. We try to point out logic and facts, and we wonder, why doesn't that ever work? Why doesn't that work? Those are facts. Well, stop being naive. They don't care about crime. They don't care about mass shootings. They are very, very okay with violence. What they truly, truly care about is that they can't hurt all of us, that they can't do to us what they see other evil countries doing to their citizens. Remember what Australia did during COVID? We saw testimony after testimony of it. Australia built concentration camps and took unvaccinated people and threw them in them. The free Western civilization country of Australia sent government goons door to door to apprehend people and throw them in a concentration camp. What kind of gun laws does Tim Walz want?
When they had a school shooting in Scotland or they had an incident in Australia, they simply made changes. They are just as free as we are. They still have gun ownership requirements, but they have made sure that they don't have these. And since they did those things, they don't have them. We are an outlier amongst nations in terms of what happens to our children. And I refuse to think that that's okay. It's simply not.
Oh, he's not worried about the children. He is, however, very, very, very worried about you and your ability to defend yourself. Just remember, there are violent people among us. We call them Democrats. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. All right, well, there is a government funding deadline coming. No, I promise. Hold on. I promise. It's actually September 3rd, and you're watching a new show on I'm Right. This is not a repeat. We haven't screwed it up. There's a government funding deadline coming, and nobody in the GOP is on the same page, and blah, 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 blah. We all know exactly how it's going to go. They'll run it right up to the deadline, forcing everybody to sign some gigantic pile of crap until we're all bankrupt and our dollar isn't worth two nickels. Joining me now, the great Congressman Chip Roy, now candidate for Texas Attorney General. Well, Chip, did I get any of that wrong? Because I'll tell you, I feel like I've seen this movie before.
Wait, you mean to tell me that every September we're not getting a different script from the producers here in Hollywood for ugly people, as they say about Washington, D.C.? Look, here's the thing. Here's the good news, right? Now that we are 8 months plus into the president's administration, we moved through and got the CR done in March. Now, most of us don't love CRs. Right? Hey, guys, do your job. Get an appropriations bills passed. I'm one of those. I think we should do our job. But remember that the problem with the appropriations process, the spending process, we have to go through the Senate, and Democrats in the Senate are crazy. So you got to get seven votes from Democrats in the Senate to move something through. So that's why we ended up with a CR in March. A lot of conservatives who don't like what we call continuing resolutions that keep funding government at the previous levels, they don't love those things. But let's remember that we have the Trump administration in charge of all of the policies and the execution of those policies in the administration in the various agencies. Why am I giving all this background? Because it is my considered judgment that we're going to need to get comfortable with continuing resolutions being our friend. We do our job in the House. We pass bills that cut spending. We're doing that, not as fast as I would like, not as much as I would like, but we are moving bills that reduce spending. In the end, the Senate's gonna say no to that for the most part. We might be able to force their hand on one or two of them, but probably not. So ultimately, if we end up with a continuing resolution, for fiscal hawks like you and me, that's actually kind of a win. Because if we can hold spending at basically the 24 spending levels, then we're holding it flat and we're actually cutting it back in terms of inflation. So we'll see what happens in September. I would ultimately support a continuing resolution at current levels. Because honestly, Jesse, if we passed a 10-year continuing resolution and never came back to Washington, that would probably be a good thing, right? Because we would just hold spending flat for 10 years and we could grow out of it. So we'll see what happens in September. A lot of work to be done, and we got a lot of debates to happen the next couple weeks.
Chip, as you have told us before, because it seems to happen a lot, you mentioned the Senate puts a stop on these things. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. We supposedly have control of the Senate. Why does the Senate stop any reduction in spending? I understand those dorks in the Senate are not going to cut as much as I want cut. I'm not an unrealistic person. We can't cut anything.
Well, we have two problems. We have Republicans who pretend to be Republican and who will spend money and fight us at every turn. We had to navigate those Republicans when we were moving the bill that's the reconciliation bill that became the big, beautiful bill, right? So we had to navigate Republicans that wanted to spend more. We held that in check. Democrats, they want to fight us at every turn. So to get seven Democrats to get to the threshold of 60 under the current Senate rules, you've got to convince Democrats to go along, and they have no interest in working with us. They want to say the sky is falling, that we're taking away benefits from old people and women and all the parade of horribles that they want to put forward, rather than working with us to actually deliver something that's fiscally responsible. So that's what we have to work with. I mean, look, I got to be honest. We ought to be pushing the Senate on why it's adhering to the 60-vote threshold rather than forcing them to have actual filibusters to stop the progress. So those are things we got to talk through. But right now, we can't get something through the Senate without them getting 60 votes.
Are we going to get a decent member of Congress when you leave and go become Attorney General, or is it going to be some nerd that I'm going to have to savage on this show all the time?
Well, first of all, I need to go earn the votes. I need to go earn the votes of the people of Texas to be the Attorney General. I hope I will do that as a former prosecutor and the former first assistant Attorney General, and frankly, someone who I think has demonstrated a commitment to conservatism and the rule of law and securing the border and going after corporate cronyism and Chinese communist lands, or like today, introducing a bill to ban stock trading. I think I've earned, hopefully, the trust of the people of Texas. And if I do, and I'm moving on, hopefully the people of Texas 21 will send somebody really solid. But look, it's up to them. Someone's got to go earn it, okay? You can't buy it. You can't come in from on high. You got to go earn it and talk to the people. And look, the odds are never great because the members of Congress, statistically speaking, have not been that good. But I do trust the people of Texas 21. They're a good, solid group of people, and hopefully we'll find somebody solid to send up there.
Tell me about this stock trading thing. I know you're on this. I know Tim Burchett's on this. The decent people are on this. It's amazing to me this is something that can't get done. Even the savages who were part of the Democrat Party base, some of them want this to get done. It's horrible that members of Congress are allowed to insider trade with knowledge they have that we don't. It's against the law. How is this not already passed?
Yeah, it should have been passed a long time ago. I will say this is a weird situation or strange bedfellows. I introduced legislation 5 years ago with a Democrat who's currently running for governor in Virginia. We disagree on most things, but she and I, Abigail Spanberger, we agreed on this. We were sitting down, we had a beer, we were talking through it and said, yeah, let's go do this. So we were the first, we led and we said, hey, this is a big issue. We had three, four, five other colleagues who had different bills. So we now have merged all those bills together into one bipartisan consensus bill. When I say bipartisan, Jesse, I mean, this is me standing on the same stage with Pramila Jayapal, with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, with other of the four far-left members of Congress, and conservatives like Scott Perry, Tim Burchett from Tennessee. You know, we've got a great, Ana Paulina Luna, we've got a great group, and I think we're going to force the hand now. Look, the arguments we get on the floor are pretty ridiculous. Members of Congress will come forward and say, well, our salary's not good enough, so we need to be able to trade stocks to be able to pay for our kids' college or do whatever. To which I say, we can have a debate about congressional salaries, right? They've been frozen for 15 years. That's up to the people to decide, and we got to decide what to do. But to say that you're going to day trade, like engage in stock trading on the very subject matters you're entrusted to objectively go vote on behalf of your constituents, if you want to trade stocks on a daily basis, then get out of Congress. There's 330 million Americans. We're 435. You don't want to be in Congress, then go home. That's fine, right? So I'm not sympathetic or moved by that. And I will tell you one last point. Those of us who are vocal about it, we're owning it. We're saying we should ban it. And it's a 90-10 issue. My colleagues who don't like it, I promise you they're not saying that very loudly because they know their constituents won't agree with them.
Chip, what's the status of the Freedom Caucus? It's been a pleasure watching it grow over the years into something that is now a headache for GOP leadership, which I love. Is it still growing? Is it still strong? Is it getting watered down as happens over time?
Actually, I think it's never been as strong as it is right now. And I say that with all due respect to my very good friends, Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan, those who founded it. And remember, I was on Capitol Hill as Ted Cruz's chief of staff when the Freedom Caucus did not exist, but we were meeting with what would become the Freedom Caucus. And then the Freedom Caucus got created about the time I left working for Ted. I was back in Texas. I was actually working in the AG's office as the first assistant attorney general. And then the Freedom Caucus was founded, and it started to have an impact. Well, then I get there in 2019, I join it, some other great folks join it. And we've had, I think, a very outsized impact in shaping the direction of policy to try to shrink government, shrink spending. Now, not as much as you want or I want, but forcing everybody to deal with these difficult issues. It's as strong as it's ever been. Now, I'm leaving to go home to Texas to hopefully be attorney general if I earn that right. Ralph Norman is going to South Carolina running for governor. Andy Biggs running for governor of Arizona. Byron Donalds is running for governor of Florida. Two or three others that we might lose. But we've got new people coming in. We have some young folks in there that have been a part of the fights. Let me give you two examples. Andrew Clyde and Josh Brakeen joined with me and Ralph Norman in the budget committee. And we voted down the big, beautiful bill in the face of all of the arrows and all of the heat coming at us, because it wasn't doing enough on the Green New Scam subsidies, and we weren't sure it was going to deliver on the Medicaid reductions that we thought were so important. So we fought, and we held the line, and then we got some real changes in the right direction. Those are some younger guys and guys that aren't leaving. There's some good folks in the Freedom Caucus, but we got to grow its ranks. We need good people to run. You know, we need solid conservative Freedom Caucus warriors to join and come up here and join the fight.
Thank you, Chip. Appreciate you as always, man. All right. It's time to lighten the mood. And look, flyovers get me. Military flyovers have always gotten me. I guess I'm just the ugliest of ugly Americans. When I'm at a football game and it happens, they get me. They did one for us when we were in Kuwait getting ready to go into Iraq. It's one of the coolest freaking things ever. And Trump met with the Poles today and honored the Polish leader and honored a fallen Polish fighter. And the formation you're going to see overhead, don't worry, they didn't screw it up. It's called the Missing Man Formation. It's what you do when you're honoring a fallen hero. See you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.